Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 6th. Construction employment on the rise. According to AGC report, a 14% increase sees Midland tied for third place among 358 metro areas nationwide. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Midland tied for the third largest percentage increase in construction employment in the nation, according to the May report of the Associated General Contractors of America. The AGC reported in its analysis that the number of construction workers in the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area rose from 35,600 in May 2022 to 40,500 in May 2023, an increase of 4,900. The 14% increase tied Midland for third place of the 358 metro areas nationwide. Hanford, Corcoran, California led all areas with an 18% increase. Danville, Illinois was second at 17%. Midland tied Corvallis, Oregon at 14%. Odessa was the only other Texas city in the top 10. The report showed Odessa tied for fifth with Clarksville, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Columbus, Ohio, at 13%. The number of construction workers in Odessa jumped by 2,300 to a total of 19,600 in May 2023. Dallas Plano Irving led all MSAs in the nation with an 11,600 worker increase. Midland finished second in the state and 11th overall in terms of the number of construction workers gained, 4,900. The report stated construction employment increased in 230, or 64%, of 358 metro areas between May 2022 and May 2023, according to an analysis by the Associated General Contractors of America of new government employment data. Quote, while nearly two-thirds of metro areas added construction jobs in the last 12 months, the total would have been higher if contractors could find qualified workers, said Ken Simonson, the association's chief economist in the report. Quote, but with a construction unemployment rate in May of only 3.5%, there are very few suitable candidates available in many markets. End quote. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has shown Midland to be the leader for employment growth every month in 2023. The Texas Workforce Commission showed that of the 12 months from May 2022 to May 2023, quote, Midland added 8,600 jobs for a job growth rate of 7.7%. The area's dominant mining, logging, and construction sector led with 4,900 new jobs. Oil boom. Motran newsletter says oil and natural gas production, severance tax revenue, show impact of Permian Basin. The story was written by Mella McEwen. The following on oil and natural gas production inside the Permian Basin and severance taxes from the Permian Basin were taken from a recent Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance newsletter. According to the Energy Information Administration, the Permian Basin produces 72% of Texas crude oil, that's 40% of U.S. oil. The Permian Basin reached a record-high natural gas production of 21 billion cubic feet daily in 2022, 14% more than the 2021 average. That increase continues in 2023, with an increase of 60 million cubic feet per day in the first 4 months of the year compared to the same period of 2022. The Permian Basin is now the nation's second-largest natural gas-producing basin, accounting for 24% of U.S. gas production. In just the Texas Department of Transportation's 12-county Odessa district, oil production rose more than 72.8 million barrels from 2021 to 2022, led by Midland County's 21.1 million barrel increase and Martin County's 20.1 million barrel increase. Reeves and Loving counties saw increases of 14.6 million and 11.8 million barrels, respectively, while Andrews, Crane, and Ector counties each showed increases of more than 3.5 million barrels annually. Martin and Midland counties also led increases in natural gas production, adding 91.1 million and 82.3 million cubic feet, respectively. Upton, Loving, and Reeves counties also showed increases of 62.3 million, 58.5 million, and 58.4 million cubic feet, respectively. The 12 counties combined increased natural gas production 399.2 million cubic feet. Oil and natural gas severance taxes from the Permian Basin make up 69% of the total collected in the entire state of Texas. From 2021 to 2022, statewide severance taxes increased by $5.6 billion to $5.2 billion to $10.8 billion. During that same period, severance taxes from the Permian Basin increased by $3.9 billion from $3.6 billion to $7.5 billion. The Permian Basin accounted for 75% of the increased severance tax revenues between 2021 and 2022, funding additional roadwork, public education, and even property tax relief proposals. Business buzz. Lane's Chicken Fingers looks to expand. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Lane's Chicken Fingers, a chicken finger franchise, is planning to expand into West Texas cities, including Midland, within a year and a half, Chief Executive Officer Garrett Reed hopes. The first Lane's location opened in 1994 in College Station by Mike Lane, a native Georgian who attended Texas A&M University. Since then, the franchise has permeated into the Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston areas while maintaining multiple locations in College Station, including the original one. In the early days, Lane's sold chicken fingers, crinkle-cut fries, Texas toast, and an assortment of sauces. They have since added chicken finger sandwiches, grilled cheese sandwiches, and potato salad, among other menu items. Reed said West Texas cities like El Paso, Abilene, and Midland are places that Lane's needs to expand to. Quote, "We're a Texas chicken company, so we really want to be all over the state of Texas," Reed said. "So we really have our sights on working our way from Dallas out toward New Mexico and hitting everything in between," end quote. Lane's, according to Reed, has a few qualities that separate themselves from similar restaurants already established in Midland. Reed said Lane's menu is more catered to Texans' tastes than the Louisiana-based Raising Cane's. There are two Raising Cane's locations in Midland. Reed pointed to the crispier, larger chicken tenders, what he called real Texas toast, and wider variety of sauces, including gravy. Quote, "We're just a little bit more Texas. They're just a little more Louisiana," he said. In addition, Reed said a key difference between Lane's and Cane's is the franchisee model. Lane's Chicken corporate locations are in Dallas and College Station. Any Lane's location outside of those two cities, like the locations in Houston, are owned by franchisees. Quote, "It's usually somebody local to the market or has some local ties or connection to the market," Reed said. Reed added that, so far, Lane's has talked to a few West Texans about owning locations in Midland, Abilene, and El Paso. Though it is not a guarantee, Reed hopes to get Lane's Chicken into Midland within the next 18 months. Stanton couple faces more charges after solicitation arrest. The story was written by Mercedes Cordero. A Stanton couple is facing additional charges after being arrested last week for solicitation of a minor, according to court documents. Byron Hayes, age 40, and Samantha Hayes, age 33, are being held in Midland County Jail on Wednesday after being arrested on Monday by Midland County Sheriff's Office investigators. Byron is facing an additional charge of indecency with a child, sexual contact, a second-degree felony. An arrest affidavit states that Byron engaged in sexual contact with a child. Bond was set at $100,000. Samantha was arrested after she, quote, "failed to immediately report the commission of the offense of indecency with a child," according to court documents. She has been charged with failure to report a felony with serious bodily injury or death results, a Class A misdemeanor. Bond was set at $7,500. On June 30th, Byron and Samantha were charged with a third-degree felony charge of online solicitation of a minor after Midland County Sheriff's Office investigators began investigating a possible sexual assault outcry made to Greenwood Independent School District investigators. Midland County Sheriff's Office investigators found evidence in Byron's cell phone that corroborated the victim's interview at the Child Advocacy Center on June 26. Investigators found text messages between Byron and Samantha communicating in a sexually explicit manner about the victim, according to the arrest affidavit. Editor's note: a previous report stated that Byron and Samantha were from Midland. Midland jail records indicate they reside in Stanton. Curbside Bistro Midland officially opened to public. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Alejandro Barrientos announced Wednesday morning via Facebook that his Midland Curbside Bistro location is officially open to the public. Since his sneak peek with the Reporter Telegram on June 28th, Barrientos has been holding soft openings for people in the community, giving his staff a few practice runs before the real deal. Quote, "We want them to be confident and ready," Barrientos said. "I see it happen to so many restaurants. They just fall that first week because they get overwhelmed. We don't know what to expect, but we'll be ready," end quote. Menu items include burgers, pulled pork sandwiches, mac and cheese grilled cheese, chicken sandwiches, loaded fries, jalapeno poppers, and more. The bar features Curbside Bistro exclusive cocktails and mocktails, as well as canned beer. Currently, Curbside Bistro Midland does not have its phone lines up, so customers must visit the location. Hours run 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. To stay up to date, such as early opening or closing, closed days during this first week of operation, follow Curbside Bistro on Facebook at facebook.com/curbside-bistro2014. The restaurant is located at 607 North Colorado Street.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 6th, 2023. Happenings. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the Blue Door, live music with Craig Bowen, Friday. ABBA Fab Happy Hour, July 11th. Live music with Dave Martinez, July 12th. Clueless Trivia, July 13th. At the Bush Convention Center, Celebration of the Arts, July 21st through 23rd. At Centennial Park, Music in the Park, July 14th. At the Destination, Tejano Thirsty Thursday, Friday Night Live, Croaking Toads, Friday, Karaoke Night, July 13th, Open Mic Night, July 20th, Friday Night Live, Rodney Dunn and the Lost Frijoles Band, July 21st, Scotty Alexander Band, July 22nd, Bring Your Own Blues Open Blues Jam, July 27th. Friday Night Live, Rita Cappuccina y Animo, July 28th. Jake Bush, July 29th. At Earth, Body and Soul, Walk-in Tarot Reading every Thursday. Walk-in Reiki Energy Clearing every Wednesday. Tea and Tarot Social, Friday. Creating Crystal Grids, July 13th. Angel Work 101, July 28th. At the Horseshoe, the Outpour Gathering, Saturday. West Texas Blowout, Part 1, July 15th. Silver Spur Trade Show, July 29th and 30th. At the Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market every Saturday. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Sundays, July 16th, 23rd, and 30th. At Parks Legato, Farmers Market, Saturday. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Cinema Under the Stars, Mighty Ducks, Sunday. Latin Queens and Comedy Kings, July 14th. Jackson Brown, July 15th. ABBA Fab, July 21st. Kenny Wayne Shepherd, July 23rd. Puppy Pals Live from America's Got Talent, July 24th. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, July 7th through 9th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Enjoy live music while indulging on handcrafted sips. Head over to the Blue Door for a night of live music accompanied by handmade craft cocktails and yummy bites. Craig Bowen from Austin continues his 10-stop Lone Star State Tour, marking off Midland with a performance at the Community Favorite. Also on display will be the bar's newly renovated bar top, along with typical happy hour drink specials and more. No cover charge. Learn more about Craig Bowen on Instagram at Craig Bowen Music. Friday, music starts at 8:30 p.m. at 4610 North Garfield Suite 1C. Shop locally at Parks Legato. Back for round two, the Parks Legato Farmers Market will take over the Odessa Town Center. Vendors from Midland, Odessa, and surrounding areas come out once a month during the second half of the year to offer their goods and products to shopping community members. Some vendors include spice and ingredient makers such as Bench Press Betty, food allergy enthusiasts like Delisa's Gluten-Free Kitchen and Bakery, plant and flower royalty like the Permian Basin Master Gardeners, plenty of lemonade and popsicle trucks, fruit and vegetable stands, jewelers, and many more. Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon, 7260 State Highway 191. Munch on free popcorn during a free movie. Enjoy a free screening of the 1992 movie Mighty Ducks, along with free popcorn, inside the temperature-controlled Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. As the only July Cinema Under the Stars event, special guest Slapjack, Odessa Jackalope's mascot, and food trucks will be lined up outside the business for pre-movie fun. Sunday, doors open at 1:30 p.m., show at 3 p.m., 1310 North FM 1788. Small Bites. Curbside Bistro Midland officially opened to public by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Alejandro Barrientos announced Wednesday morning via Facebook that his Midland Curbside Bistro location is officially open to the public. Since his sneak peek with the Reporter Telegram June 28th, Barrientos has been holding soft openings for people in the community, giving his staff a few practice runs before the real deal. "We want them to be confident and ready," Barrientos said. "I see it happen to so many restaurants. They just fall that first week because they get overwhelmed. We don't know what to expect, but we'll be ready." Menu items include burgers, pulled pork sandwiches, mac and cheese, grilled cheese, chicken sandwiches, loaded fries, jalapeno poppers, and more. The bar features Curbside Bistro exclusive cocktails and mocktails, as well as canned beer. Currently, Curbside Bistro Midland does not have its phone lines up, so customers must visit the location. Hours are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. To stay up to date, such as early opening or closing, closed days during this first week of operation, follow Curbside Bistro on Facebook at facebook.com/curbsidebistro2014. Located at 607 North Colorado.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 6th. Evangeline Vanjie Theus Lindsay passed away on June 29th at the age of 92. Vanjie was born December 29th, 1930, as the third child of Anton Philip and Olga Wanda Theus. She was delivered into the world by her maternal grandfather, Dr. J. A. Leggett, in Menard, Texas. The Theus family moved to Midland in 1939 when Anton became the Mobil Oil consignee. Vanjie graduated from Midland High School and went off to Texas Tech University at the age of 16. She transferred to Baylor University. Upon her return to Midland, Vanjie taught third graders for 1 year at Sam Houston Elementary. Then she became the main receptionist at the Western Company, owned by Eddie Childs. Among the new arrivals was H.E. Ed Lindsay Jr., one of three co-founders of MWL Tool and Supply Company. Ed and Vanjie married in 1954. Ed died when Vanjie was 63 years old. In 2020, Vanjie moved to the Village Senior Living Community in Austin, Texas. Vanjie was predeceased by her parents, Wanda and Anton, sisters Jackie and Marthan, and husband Ed. She is survived by daughter Kristen and son-in-law Ross Bassinger of Austin, son Stephen Edward Lidsey of South Glastonbury, Connecticut, and several grandchildren. She is also survived by niece Freddie Nobles Seeker, nephew Philip Nobles, nephew Julian Pierce, and nephews John, Michael, and David Lindsay. A celebration of her life will be held in Midland on Friday, July 7th, at First Presbyterian Church Chapel at 11 a.m., followed by a reception at the Midland Petroleum Club. Please visit alicefunerals.com to leave online condolences. Mary Jacqueline McBride, known to friends as Jackie, passed away on Saturday, May 20th. Memorial service will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 8th at Redeemer Christian Fellowship Church, 3000 Franklin Avenue in Midland. Jackie was born February 24, 1928, to the late Luther Bland Foster and Lorna Tallman Foster in Shelbyville, Illinois. On May 13, 1950, she married her high school sweetheart, John P. McBride, Jr., and they celebrated 64 years together. Jackie is preceded in death by her parents, Luther and Lorna Foster, husband John P. McBride, Jr., sons Patrick McBride and Terry J. McBride. She is survived by her children, Michael McBride, Christine Costin, Sherry Hart, Julie Bollinger, and husband Donnie, as well as 9 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Patricia Lyles of Midland passed away on Sunday, July 2nd at Midland Memorial Hospital. A visitation will take place from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, July 7th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Patricia and her identical twin sister Phyllis were born in Breckenridge, Texas on February 25th, 1942 to Daryl and Barbara Warren while Daryl was serving overseas in the Philippines during World War II. After Daryl returned home, the family moved to a farm between McCamey and Bakersfield and started cotton farming. Patricia graduated from McCamey High School in 1960. After graduation, Patricia moved to Midland, Texas to attend Commercial College and met her future husband, Richard Lyles, while working at Kruger Jewelry. Richard and Patricia fell in love and married on December 16, 1963. Their son Tommy was born January 23, 1965. Patricia then went to work for First National Bank in Midland for 15 years before changing careers. She then went to work in the oil industry as an accountant for Dawson Oil, which later merged with Pioneer Natural Resources, where she worked until retiring in 2013. Patricia is survived by her husband Richard and her son Tommy Lyles. Patricia is preceded in death by her parents, by a sister Phyllis Woods, and brother Daryl Warren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to your favorite charity or to the American Cancer Society. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Peggy Sue Jones Hahn was born on July 29, 1931, in Roscoe, Texas, to Jesse Fay and Woodrow Milton Jones. She died on June 19th, a month away from her 92nd birthday. Peggy graduated from Monahans High School in 1947 and later moved to Midland, Texas. She attended Texas Tech University. She met her late husband, Lawrence Hahn, and Monahan's on a blind date right after high school, while Lawrence was home from the Air Force. They married in 1953 and remained married for 45 years until Lawrence passed away in 1999. Peggy remained active in the family business for many years after Lawrence passed away. Peggy was preceded in death by her late husband, Lawrence Hahn, her parents Fay and Woodrow Jones, and her three younger brothers, Jackie Jones, Bill Jones, and Jerry Jones. She is survived by her three daughters, Sian Nimir and husband David, Leslie Stanley, Lori Sherman and husband Robert, nephew Leonard Jones, sister-in-law Charlotte Jones, as well as grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, located at 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland, on Saturday, July 8th. Lunch will be provided at 11 a.m. A celebration of life will be held in the Ellis Funeral Home Chapel at 12 p.m., with a graveside ceremony to follow at the Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Sherry Rico passed away suddenly and tragically on a Thursday in June. She was a classically trained ballerina who, with immense courage, moved by herself from Pampa, Texas to New York City to pursue her dream, living on canned tuna and peanut butter. There she ultimately met her husband of 42 years, Henry Rico, who fondly remembers the fortune he spent in cab fares to see her every day in the Lone Star Cafe. She is survived by her husband, Henry Rico, daughter Jessica Spencer, son Joseph Rico, as well as several grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her father, Thelbert Maurice Whiteley, and her sister, Eva Marie Poole. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, July 7th, at the branch at Nellie Pickle and Welch. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 8th, at Mid-Cities 191. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in memory of Sherry Rico to Pink the Basin, which can be found online at www.pinkthebasin.com. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Antonio Nagarete, age 80, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, June 29th, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 3 p.m. July 7th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements have been entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Linda Robinette, age 74, of Midland, passed away July 3rd. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, July 10th, at Elevate Church in Midland, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, July 6th. Transportation Employee of the Year has found the perfect job. In only his second year as an Ector County ISD bus driver, Sammy Hostetter has won the Transportation Employee of the Year award. I was really honored. I was very humbled and very surprised, Hostetter said. He added that everyone in the transportation department deserves Employee of the Year honors because they put in the work and do their jobs to the fullest. Hostetter said he's going to continue doing what he's doing, performing his job to its fullest, and keep it consistent. No sense in changing, he said. I'm there when they need me to do anything. I'm there to do anything extra. Hostetter was previously a driver for Frito-Lay for 21 years, delivering to grocery and convenience stores. His daughter is a teacher for ECISD and told him about bus driving. He added that he likes working with youngsters and has two of his own. I have enjoyed it tremendously, so I've had no issues at all, Hostetter said. His routes include Murray Fly Elementary, Crockett Middle School, and Odessa High School. Hostetter said he also drives activity buses for athletics and band trips, for example. I do activities when necessary. They call me to do trips out of town. I take kids to Lubbock, Abilene. I've done trips to Dallas. I really extremely enjoy that also, Hostetter said. He also drives the equipment van to the field for football. Hostetter added that he enjoys the transportation department staff. It's like working with family. Everybody helps each other out, so that's another reason I'm here, is because of that. I really truly enjoy that. Plus, you know the kiddos. I've enjoyed working with the kiddos. They're superb. I've never had any issues on my route. The way I look at it, if you take care of any issues on the route, you don't have a problem. I've had no problems on my route since I've been here, he said. Parents get along with me, and I've had no issues with parents, Hostetter said. He said he's planning to be at ECISD for a while, and feels he's found the perfect job. Basically, when school's out, you're off, so that gives me flexibility to do what you want, Hostetter said. The split shifts also is useful because he works in the mornings and can do errands and come back at 2:30 for his afternoon shift. Hostetter's mother is from Argentina and his father is from Odessa. He was born in Colombia, lived all over the world growing up, Argentina, Bolivia, Peru, Cairo, Egypt, and the Canary Islands, for example. Hostetter is a 1981 graduate of Odessa High School. He and his wife Celeste have been married for nearly 39 years and were high school sweethearts. They have two daughters. One is a teacher at Pease Elementary School and the other is a registered nurse. Cristelda Espinoza, driver supervisor Westside, said she is proud of Hostetter. He is a very good worker. He's always here. Almost perfect attendance, Espinoza said. She added that the award was well-deserved and that he works well, very well with students and is very professional. He takes care of his kids and the parents. If there's a problem, he fixes it quickly and professionally, Espinoza said. Guadalupe Mountains National Park implements preventative measures due to increased fire risk. The prolonged hot, dry, and windy weather has increased fire danger, leading to extremely dry vegetation that is highly susceptible to even the smallest of sparks. Effective Tuesday, July 4th, and until further notice, smoking is prohibited, except inside personal vehicles, at Guadalupe Mountains National Park. No campfires, charcoal, or propane fire rings are allowed in Guadalupe Mountains National Park at any time of year. TxDOT issues Midland County traffic alert. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a traffic alert Wednesday for I-20 service roads between FM 1788 and Loop 250. County Road 1250 will be closed at the North Frontage Road intersection from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Wednesday, July 5th for paving operations. Thursday, July 6th, County Road 1270 will be closed at the South Frontage Road intersection from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. for paving operations. Brief stops may be required for construction vehicle movement. Watch for warning signs and flaggers at this work zone. Hashtag be safe, drive smart, hashtag in the street TX. Latin Queens and Comedy Kings. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, has scheduled the Latin Queens and Comedy Kings comedy show July 14th. The doors open at 7 p.m. and the event starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $40. Visit tinyurl.com/YCYWAMY7. U.S. judge recommends a settlement over management of the Rio Grande. A federal judge has recommended that the U.S. Supreme Court approve a settlement among three western states over the management of one of North America's longest rivers. The U.S. Circuit Judge Michael Malloy, the special master overseeing the case, outlined his recommendations in a report filed Monday. He called the proposal fair, reasonable, and consistent with a decades-long water-sharing agreement that spells out how Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas must share the Rio Grande. It was unclear when the Supreme Court will take up the recommendation. The court just wrapped up a busy term last week, issuing rulings on affirmative action, gay rights, and President Joe Biden's $400 billion plan to cancel or reduce federal student loan debt. The states reached the proposed settlement last year. The federal government objected to several reasons, including that the proposal did not mandate specific water capture or use limitations within New Mexico. The end result today may be a delay in final resolution of all of the United States' concerns, but as a matter of paramount importance to the compact, the Texas apportionment and the treaty water will be delivered, Malloy wrote in his report. New Mexico officials have been implementing the settlement and will require reducing the use of Rio Grande water through a combination of efforts that range from paying farmers to leave their fields barren to making infrastructure improvements. Former New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas, whose office was part of the negotiations, told the Associated Press on Wednesday that he was grateful the judge recommended approval. Balderas, who finished his tenure in 2022, said the proposed settlement was a historic victory for New Mexico's farmers and ranchers and will protect New Mexico's most precious resource for future generations. Some New Mexico lawmakers voiced concerns during a recent legislative meeting, saying the settlement will create a battle between users in southern and northern New Mexico, and that most farmers won't go for the prices being offered by the state through a fallowing program. Farmers in southern New Mexico had to rely more heavily on groundwater wells over the last two decades as drought and climate change resulted in reduced flows and less water in reservoirs along the Rio Grande. The groundwater pumping is what prompted Texas to sue, claiming that the practice was cutting into the amount of water that was ultimately delivered as part of the interstate compact. Malloy noted that the proposal recognizes the new use of a gauging station near El Paso, Texas, and several other measurements to ensure New Mexico delivers what's owed to Texas. New Mexico is agreeing to drop its challenges against Texas in exchange for clarifying how water will be accounted for as it flows downstream. Their proposal also places a duty on New Mexico to manage citizens' water use to meet delivery requirements at the new gauging station. Malloy pointed out that the proposal does not specify how New Mexico must accomplish its internal water management goals. State Engineer Mike Hammond, New Mexico's top water manager, said Wednesday that his office is committed to complying with the settlement and the compact through water rights administration, depletion management, and supply augmentation strategies that will prevent the burden of compliance from falling to any single sector, particularly agriculture. If New Mexico fails to send enough water to Texas, then the Elephant Butte Irrigation District, the largest in New Mexico, must temporarily transfer rights to an irrigation district in Texas. If Texas receives too much, there will be a similar transfer from the El Paso District to the Elephant Butte District. Milloy said there's nothing in their proposal that protects New Mexico or users in the state against future claims from the Federal Bureau of Reclamation or from other New Mexicans. Simply put, if usable water arrives in the reservoir, it releases for use downstream and reaches Texas and Mexico in the proper amounts, Milloy wrote. Fights over who in New Mexico is taking too much and paying too little, and whether New Mexico itself is doing enough to address and police the situation, can be resolved somewhere other than the Supreme Court. Red Hot Tribute. The Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled the Red Hot Tribute from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. July 8th. The Red Hot Tribute is a Red Hot Chili Peppers tribute band. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/ykvjfun2. Annual Golf Tournament, Knights of Columbus Council 8773, has scheduled its 22nd annual golf tournament on September 9th at Ratliff Ranch Golf Course. Four-person scramble and shotgun start at 8 a.m. Registration is open for teams, sponsors, and donations of items for a raffle to be held afterward. For more information, call Pedro Fierro at 432-258-3304 or email pedrojavier_fierro@yahoo.com. New FOCA head of schools is a familiar face. Lindsay Lumpkin has found a new home as head of schools at First Odessa Christian Academy. It is not only her new professional home, but it's also associated with her church home, First Baptist Church. Lumpkin, who has been principal of Downing Elementary School in Ector County, ISD, said she wasn't looking for a new job. It was literally God laid it in my lap. I go to church here and have attended since I was a very small child. My pastor called me and he had two questions for me when he wanted me to serve on a committee. And then number two, conveniently, he asked, I would like you to submit your application for head of schools, Lumpkin said. That was not what she was expecting. She said yes to the first question and asked if she could pray about the second one. That's kind of where this all started. Deciding to come was very difficult because I have been in ECISD for a long time and I love my school. I love the kids that were at my school. I love my teachers, really great people. The parents were awesome, so it was a hard decision to make. But ultimately, it's where I felt that the Lord was calling me, Lumpkin said. A lot of thought also went into being head of schools in a place where she goes to church. She has known First Baptist Senior Pastor Byron McWilliams for 19 years. We are very excited to welcome Dr. Lindsay Lumpkin as the head of schools at First Odessa Christian Academy. Dr. Lumpkin brings a wealth of knowledge and wisdom to this position that will serve to take our school to its highest level of achievement. She is caring, kind, capable, and approachable, all of which are keys to success. Even more important, Dr. Lumpkin has a great love of the Lord that she longs to share with her students. There is no doubt that our greatest days as a private Christian academy are ahead under her leadership, McWilliams said. Lumpkin has had most of her rites of passage at First Baptist, accepting Jesus, being baptized, getting married, and having her father's funeral. She is in the choir and the ensemble at First Baptist. The past 19 years he's led us, and led us well, Lumpkin said, referring to McWilliams. With all that overlap, she wants to make sure she could still be herself and head of schools. There's got to be a little bit of separation there, but this church has grown with me. I have grown with it. People have come and gone, but there's still a core value of taking care of people and loving on people. That was something that I wanted to make sure that I could worship freely and still have my pastor be my pastor. And then when it came head of schools, then he and I could talk business. First and foremost, we were going to run it as a Christian organization and run it like Christians should. And that is going to be a positive relationship the whole way through. I have no doubt that that's exactly what it will be, Lumpkin said. She added that McWilliams didn't want her to step back from anything she was doing with the church. Lumpkin wanted to be sure that there wouldn't be any friction by adding her new role. We sat down and we prayed about it. We talked about it. And he assured me, and he looked. We always, not always, see eye to eye on things, but there's a loving way that we can handle those things and move forward. I said, okay. I said, deal. I said, you bring no surprises, I'll bring no surprises, Lumpkin said. She added that she plans to keep McWilliams in the loop so there will be full transparency about everything. He's given me full rein to run my campus the way that it needs to be run and to do what needs to be done under the guises that Jesus is first, and then we put our family and friends second and academics third. That's what we're going to work on, Lumpkin said. The school has certified teachers and uses the state curriculum, Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills. We are still searching for high school science, a high school English position, and a PE coach. Those are the three positions that we have. We have no doubt that God will provide something, but as you know, we come from UCSD and there's a shortage there. We don't want a shortage here either. There are some benefits to working in the public school system versus the private school system and vice versa, Lumpkin said. The school also has houses that they are selected for. The houses are service-based and older students mentor the younger ones. Because First Odessa Christian is a smaller school, she feels somewhat calmer, but there is still a sense of urgency because it seems like school is starting soon. At Downing, she had almost 900 students, and at First Odessa Christian, they expect to have about 200 in kindergarten through sophomore year. FOCA is adding a grade a year. That's a huge difference. It's also a huge undertaking. When you have to write a master schedule for your elementary, and then you've got to figure out how to merge that with your middle school and your high school. We're going to have drivers because our kids are going to be sophomores in high school. We're going to have kids driving to school, so we've got to find parking for them and make sure that we have a system in place for that. There's a lunch that needs to involve kinder through 5th grade and 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, so it's figuring out those scheduling differences, Lumpkin said. She added that the school has a long-term plan and a vision for the campus. If we continue to grow with the rate that we're growing currently and recruiting and meeting attendance requirements, we will be looking for a place to grow into. That will have to be a determination that we make as a campus, as a church, and how that's going to be supported, how that's going to be figured out and built, Lumpkin said. The school is in its 5th year, so it's relatively new. It feels like we have an opportunity to craft some things the way that we want it to be done, she added. We're looking at adding a more Christ-centered curriculum. We've always had it, but we're really looking at something that already has it written into the curriculum. That's a positive, but we also want to keep it in line with the state. We use the text the state standards because we know that a student that comes in from high school in our local public schools will be on a certain level and we'll have to meet them where their need is as well and where their achievement is. If we keep with the techs and the state standards that our kids, if they were to leave us or if we gain more students from our local public school, then we would be on target for that, Lumpkin said. The hope is that FOCA students will start out in the church daycare system and graduate. It's also that the school will be able to provide everything public schools do, but with an emphasis on Christ, teaching them the Bible, having a love for other people, and standing firm in their faith. It's a mission field for me. It's always been a mission field for me. I wanted kids to feel loved. I wanted them to feel accepted. I wanted them to feel that they could do anything that they set their minds to, whether I was in Sunday school class at church or in ninth grade classroom, Lumpkin said. Lumpkin has had several roles in her 20 years of public education. She began her career as a secondary English language arts teacher, has worked for Region 18 as an educational consultant, was the founding principal at Falcon Early College High School on the campus of UTPB, and an assistant principal in both primary and secondary within the Ector County ISD system. Since 2021, Lumpkin has been the principal at Downing. She started out at Odessa College and earned her Bachelor of Arts and Master of Education in leadership degrees from the University of Texas Permian Basin and her doctorate in educational leadership from Texas Tech University. Growing up, Lumpkin never thought she would go into education. Her mother was a school teacher and her grandfather taught at ECISD. You have to put up with kids and their attitudes, and you don't make enough money. Well, God has a sense of humor because here I am. I just finished my 20th year of education. I love kids. I love teaching. I love to see voracious readers, somebody capturing contest and comprehending something. That's fantastic. I just love to see the light bulb come on and just their eyes wide, and then they figure something out that they didn't know that they could do. It's just an incredible experience. It's an honor to be able to teach kids, she said. Looking out for your lungs, guest contributor. Family features. The lungs are the centerpiece of your respiratory system. When you inhale, lung air enters your lungs and oxygen from that air moves to your blood. At the same time, carbon dioxide, a waste gas, moves from your blood to the lungs and gets exhaled. This process is essential to life. Millions of Americans are living with lung disease, such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, and asthma, which make breathing difficult and can lead to other related problems. To help protect your lungs from injury or disease, consider these tips. From experts at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, limit exposure to air pollution. You may be exposed to more pollutants indoors than outdoors. Ventilate indoor spaces and clean often to prevent buildup of mold and dust. Avoid cleaning products and air fresheners with strong odors. If you are exposed to pollutants at work, use protective gear. Be sure to check the air quality index before taking part in outdoor activities. Be physically active. Exercise helps make your lungs stronger and lowers your risk of lung injury or disease. Aim for at least 2.5 hours each week, alternating between moderate activities like brisk walking and vigorous activities like running. Aim for a healthy weight. Losing just 5 to 10% of extra weight can help improve overall health. To get and stay motivated, consider setting specific and realistic goals, exercising with a friend, tracking your progress, and celebrating when you meet a goal. Quit smoking or don't start. Quitting smoking offers many health benefits, including reducing the risk of developing COPD and other conditions, as well as reducing lung infections, asthma symptoms, and breathing problems. Avoiding secondhand smoke reduces those risks too. So steer clear of areas where smoking is allowed, and ask loved ones to smoke not to go to do it around you. Get regular checkups and keep vaccines up to date. Regular exams can help spot problems early. Talk to your health care provider about any breathing problems you may be experiencing, as well as what to do to quit smoking. Create healthy eating and exercise plans and get vaccinated for flu, pneumonia, and COVID-19. Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/breathebetter to learn more about lung health and steps you can take to keep your lungs healthy.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.